Good evening. Good evening, Chicago. Good evening. Thank you so much for having me here. I'm honored and really humbled to be here with you tonight. Can't tell you how much I appreciate the invitation to come here on behalf of the men and women at Bridgewater Interiors and our partners at Johnson Controls to talk a little bit about the development of our company, what we hope for its future, and our attempts along the way to take the lead. I'm going to talk for not more than 30 minutes. I've been coached. Now, I'm a lawyer, so when they called me and said, we want you to come talk, I said, really? And nobody's going to question me back, and I get to just talk. So I got to be careful about it, but I'm coached, and we're going to be okay. If I could please see the first slide. I've got just 12 slides. Only two of them are eye charts. And that includes this cover page. What you see here in the photo is the interior of the new Buick LaCrosse coming from the General Motors Corporation. And I'm proud to share with you that we'll be launching that program at our Detroit facility in just a couple of months. The second slide, please. You'll see this slide twice in the presentation. It's slide 2 and it's slide 12. And I did that very deliberately because if there's one thing I want to leave with you today, it's the information here. This is who we strive to be. This is the core phrase from a mission statement that I developed with one of the executives at Johnson Controls, as we were kind of the point persons for developing the Bridgewater Interiors strategic plan in 2009. We're now on our third iteration of that strategic plan. We have a business plan for the company that goes out to 2022. And then some hopeful goals beyond that. At the upper left of this slide, you see a photo of Detroit's Ambassador Bridge. The company is named after the bridge and the river on which it sits, which is about 50 yards out the back door of our Detroit facility, which serves as our headquarters as well. Customer-focused automotive interior systems manufacturing at industry-leading performance levels, and we want to fulfill the ideals of minority business enterprise leadership, not participation, leadership. Yes, sir. We strive to be, thank you. We are all about trying to be a pillar for everything that the diversity and inclusion movement in corporate America represents. I'll share some numbers about the company with you that I hope you will see backs that up a bit. Next slide, please. This is one of the two eye charts. And so I apologize for that, but I really wanted to share this photo at the top of myself and my father. This photo was taken a few years ago. We were profiled in Black Enterprise magazine as its company of the year. We were very pleased and proud about that. And the information you see alongside provides some of the basics of the history of the company. The company is a joint venture between a partnership that my father formed with several other African-American businessmen on the one hand, and Johnson Controls, which is a publicly traded Fortune 75 firm, on the other. Because Johnson Controls is so large, life of the company can sometimes feel a bit like, you know, being the tail trying to wag the dog. But we've learned to grow up alongside our big brother shareholder over the years, have gained immeasurable competence and expertise and ability to not just survive, but thrive in the automotive industry. And we really feel like it's a partnership that can be emulated for other minority-owned firms. 1998 was the formation year of the company. It was really the product of an effort from General Motors to take a significant step in the minority business enterprise inclusion movement. There are, in the automotive industry, lots and lots of small companies, lots and lots of companies that don't operate on the production side of things, where capital costs are very high and companies have to be able to scale very quickly. Johnson Controls partnered with my father's group to put together an entity that could satisfy the kinds of demands that are required when you move into day-to-day production space. They began with one plant, one customer, one contract. In 1999, the company went operational. And 17 years later, we're at four facilities on 12 models for four of the original equipment manufacturers. It's been explosive growth, and we've been beyond blessed. And I'm tremendously grateful for the opportunity. One of the things my father has imbued into the culture of the company is his own optimism. And I'll share with you my view that taking the lead is a lot about having the courage to step out front and attempt to lead. When you aren't sure you can lead, when it hasn't been done before. The company has done that at various stages of its development and been richly rewarded. We look around us now in our industry and even very near our sector of the industry, and we see lots of similarly structured companies, minority business joint ventures with other major tier one suppliers with similar ownership structures, and we feel very good because we know that it began with Bridgewater Interiors. And while it's taken for granted now that it's doable because, you know, 8 or 10 companies are doing it, in 1998, nobody was sure that putting up a state-of-the-art facility in the center of Detroit with a Detroit-based workforce, which had not been trained in manufacturing what were then the most technologically advanced seats in the industry, for the Cadillac DeVille. A lot of people didn't think it would be done. General Motors was nervous, Johnson Controls was nervous, and it was my father and his partners who said, no, we're going to do this, and we're going to excel at it, and we're going to set a standard. And several years later, they had done that. In 2002, the company secured the Shingo Award for manufacturing, which meant it was the top manufacturing facility in North America of its type. We're tremendously proud about that award, even all these years later. And thank you. And it's the award that really opened the door for additional growth and development of the company. Next slide, please. This is our leadership team, founder and chairman, Ron Sr., myself, our chief operating officer, human resources lead and chief financial officer. I talk a little bit here about the distinction in the roles and responsibilities between what we do internally and what we try to leverage our joint venture partner for to bring to the partnership. My father, after spending the first 15 years of his career as a systems analyst at Ford Motor Company, became an entrepreneur. He was in the restaurant business for nearly a decade, and after that spent another decade in economic development at two prominent Detroit nonprofit firms. And it was in those experiences that he learned that when he got the Bridgewater opportunity, it would be important to almost approach the joint venture as a franchise, deciding very carefully where to load up on debt, where to load up on capital, and where not to. So things like engineering and design that have long lead times, huge costs, require huge staffing, We have mostly licensed those types of services either from Johnson Controls or outside the company. And we've tried to focus on the core competency of being the best manufacturer of our type in the space. Next, please. This is a representation of some of the growth that the company has enjoyed in the last decade, but I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that very first bar itself represents about a tripling of revenue from where the company started. This is about the time that I joined the company. I started the company in 2007. Prior to that, as you heard in the introduction, I worked in a range of roles in the law department at Johnson Controls and then in different areas of operations management at that company. That development was key to being able to put together a viable succession plan at Bridgewater itself. You talk about God being good, the timing worked out really just quite perfectly. In retrospect, this all looks like a grand plan. You're right, I'm here, the company's 17 years old, and I'm the CEO and so forth, and Dad is retiring. But it was no sure thing when he started. He was reluctant to leave his nonprofit role because he enjoyed the economic development space so much. And there was no certainty that the company was going to have legs, was going to enjoy growth, and was going to need a succession plan. And by the time that became evident, I'm grateful in retrospect that I was at a point in my career where I could hear the message that I needed to be open to entrepreneurship, which is not something that I had had a lot of interest in pursuing prior to that. I mentioned the early performance of the company leading to additional growth opportunities, and that's what you see represented here. We were able to add a second facility in the northeast suburbs of Detroit. We were able to add a third facility out near the state capital in Lansing, and then finally a fourth facility near Birmingham, Alabama, where we support Honda Manufacturing of America. And all of that happened literally in years 3 to 6 or so. Next. We've gained a lot of recognition over the years. I mentioned Black Enterprise earlier in the 2015 BE100s. We were the number three firm. We've been one of the three firms in the top three firms in the manufacturing space since before I joined the company. We do recognize that this is this is a privilege, but it's also, there's a real responsibility that comes with this. And a little bit later, as I talk about our efforts to be very active corporate citizens in the community, to make sure that the company is always giving back, always having an attitude and an approach of servant leadership, we think that that pays off for us in ways tangible and intangible at the company that all helps foster the success. In automotive manufacturing, there are several subsystems of cars that generally have to be produced within 30 miles or so of an assembly plant because it's just too expensive, because these components are too large to transport them over long distances. Nobody wants to, neither the OEMs nor the suppliers want to deal with large inventory levels. And so, because of the business we're in, we always have to be within 30 miles or so of the assembly plants we support. And so engines, tire and wheel assemblies, and seating systems especially are all assembled closely. And I mention that now because if you look at Mr. Vickers' company, Billy Vickers' company, just below ours on the 2015 BE100s list, his is a tire and wheel company. Huge. Billy Vickers is a good man, a personal friend of mine. We consult regularly about the trials and tribulations of being Black-owned companies in the business, being relatively large companies by some measures, but really quite small in the larger scheme of automotive manufacturing. And so it's a real blessing to have, you know, other companies close to us on this list. You guys might remember that last company there in the top five, Vinnie Johnson. And I know I'm in Chicago, but for me, the good old days of basketball are before Michael Jordan, when the Pistons were regularly, you know, do their thing. Largely with the help of Mr. Johnson, who's now an automotive industry entrepreneur, has a very large company of his own. Actually, part of his company is a joint venture like ours with a large French supplier. And so, again, an opportunity with someone local to compare notes, support each other. There are really, you know, a dozen or 20 fairly large African-American-owned automotive suppliers in the Detroit region. And it really is a very collegial group. Many of these proprietors have been key mentors of mine over the last 10 to 15 years of my career. And, you know, this is not the last succession story you'll hear if you're paying attention to our industry. I'm very proud to tell you that. There are a lot of plans afoot to make sure that the toehold that our community has gained in this industry is not lost, and that diversity and inclusion doesn't get muddled, doesn't get lost amidst all the other priorities of the industry. A huge amount of the value that we think we provide to our customers and other stakeholders around the company is around the area of community involvement. And so we mandate that our senior leaders join at least one nonprofit board, make sure that the company is a champion at that nonprofit, and that we are doing things that are consistent with our mission. Specifically in the area of community relations, what that means is we want to be giving back in each of the four communities where we operate the business. We want to be supporting organizations that our employees are connected to. We want to be supporting ethnic and racial minority business and economic development, and particularly in the African American community. And so these are the things that we're focusing on. And here you see represented several of the organizations that we support significantly and all the time. Thank you. There near the middle, you'll see the logo for Detroit PAL, the Detroit Police Athletic League. If you'll, you know, just indulge me with a short story, I think it's illustrative of the kind of thing that we like to think that we represent. I became involved with Detroit PAL in 2003 when I was still practicing law. I provided pro bono legal services to the organization as it secured the rights to redevelop a large playground in Detroit that had multiple athletic fields for millions of dollars. This was at a time when the city was in a relative financial downward trajectory. The Parks and Recreation Department was really struggling. And so that was a key negotiation for the nonprofit. And we successfully completed that venture. And today, essentially, our baseball programs are headquartered there. I was later invited to join the board, which I did. I presently chair the board, and we're an annual sponsor. And please know the very generous honorarium that you have provided to me with your invitation tonight, every dime of it is going to the Detroit Police Athletic League. We support about 13,000 boys and girls in Detroit who, by and large, don't have very many positive activities to keep them motivated in those critical after-school hours of 3 to 7 p.m. And so we do a lot of things trying to focus on programming and partnering with the city of Detroit and even partnering with the public school system and the charter schools to make a lot of good things happen for these kids. We have the largest network of trained, screened, volunteer African-American men who mentor Black boys and girls in Detroit. It's a national model, and I know I'm here to talk about Bridgewater Interiors, but it's just one example of the kind of organization that we try to support big at the company. We have endowed a scholarship for racial minority students at the University of Michigan. I'm told that we're the first black-owned company to do so. We have, thank you. We have joined with a handful of other African-American families and businesses to endow the Charles Wright Museum of African-American History in Detroit, which is one of the largest in its type. And so again, these are just, you know, all examples of the kinds of things that we try to do to walk the talk, to try to do good, even as we try to do well. We get a lot of encouragement from customers and other stakeholders to continue this work. And what we find is that it's important to be vocal about it. We talk a lot about amplifying what we're doing and finding a way to be a little, I don't want to say less focused on the day-to-day production of the cars and trucks, but while we're doing that, a little more focused on amplifying what we're about more than that. Because, you know, I make car parts, but I'm selling jobs. I'm selling. I'm very well aware of that. I'm very well aware of that. You know, over 70% of our workforce is comprised of racial minority persons. 40% of our workforce is female. You see that half my leadership team is female. Half my plant managers were female a couple of years ago, which is rare in this industry. So again, just all examples of hopefully us trying to walk the talk. We don't get to do any of this if we aren't doing the industry-leading thing. And so most of what we try to do to make sure that's happening is I know that I'm able to license the best manufacturing operating system and the best quality operating system in the industry from my Johnson Controls shareholder. We work to out-execute them at their own systems. And we know that when our plants appear at the top of all the metrics of measurables that we talk to weekly and monthly inside the JCI network, that if we're near the top of those lists, that we are adding value to that shareholder, to our external customers, and to everybody that cares about us. And most importantly, we're proving a point. We're proving that that plant that was built in Detroit, that nobody thought could be staffed and make seats the right way, could be done. So, very, very grateful. Very, very grateful for all of it. The volumes now are quite large. We make almost 10% of the seating systems that go into cars that are assembled in the United States. And so, when you buy a car, if it was built here, there's a pretty good chance that we did it for you. And just know that we really, really cared about getting it right. We want you to love the leather and the how it feels when you sit in it. And does it heat up fast enough? And all of these wonderful things. So that's about all I'm going to say about the company. I would say just a couple of words about kind of the background behind that and how I think that my faith walk and the mentors of my life have brought me to a point where hopefully I'm ready to assume this responsibility. I mentioned, you know, the commitment to gender diversity at our company. You know, that comes from Harriet Scott, who was my maternal grandmother. God rest her soul. I couldn't understand for a while why people in my industry had a tough time with strong women leaders, because I grew up in a family where a very strong woman leader kind of led the show. And we were raised in the AME church, and my grandmother was very devout, and we learned to be that way. and I took that with me to the military academy, and where especially the fellowship of the other, especially African-American cadets, not that it's about self-segregation, but, you know, but when you grow up in a city where the mayor's black, the police chief's black, and your teachers are black, you kind of take all that for granted, and then you go to an institution that is much more conservative in every way, and only about 4% of the people are black. It's a little bit of a culture shock. And so, as we learned to get through our days at the academy, we found ourselves collecting with the cultural traditions that we grew up with that were familiar. And what we found was that whether you were from Atlanta or Detroit or Chicago or Los Angeles or somewhere in between, you know, we had gospel music in common, we had the black church in common, and we coalesced around that, and it was a very, very powerful source of strength and inspiration for me. And I would say that really my individual faith walk outside of the guidance of my grandmother particularly, but my mother and my aunt to also, really began with that experience. I don't think it's any mistake that, you know, my very best friends to this day are the brothers I went to the service academy with 30 years ago. And so all along the way, that's been an important touch point for me. So I've had crises in my life, and regrettably, they have occurred. I have always found that if I just give back to church, things seem to clear up a little bit. I'm very active in a small Baptist church in my community in the northwest suburbs of Detroit, and I'm the treasurer now. My wife is president of the preschool committee, and I talked to her. I said, I didn't really plan all this for myself, and she tells me all the time, well, that's because you're not in charge of that. God had a plan for you. So I'm humble about all of it. I am learning always. I'm very prayerful about wanting and needing and seeking wisdom and strength to fulfill responsibilities to my family, to these 1,900 or so people who are in our employ, to the community that I know looks to the company to continue its success. I've been shocked at the number of times I've been approached and encouraged about Bridgewater Interiors getting the succession plan right, because so many black-owned companies don't. And, you know, you guys really have to pay attention. And Ron, you got to do this. And Ron, you got to do that. And it was intimidating at first, but I've learned over time to draw encouragement from it, because it's wonderful to know that people care about what we're doing, and that when we've got, you know, our head down, that it matters. I didn't talk to the last two photos that you saw scroll, but I wanted them included because it's just an illustration of the important stuff that we think that we're about. You know, one photo showed a huge cross-section of our employees at one facility supporting an annual breast cancer foundation walk in Lansing, Michigan, and the other photo showed a cross-section of our Detroit facility employees. We are an annual supporter of the United Negro College Fund Walk for Education. Three out of the last 5 years, we've been awarded for being the largest fundraising firm in our category for that event, and it's the largest Walk for Education event in the country. So we're very, again, just trying to be about it, grateful to God for all of it. So happy to be here with you tonight. Thank you so much for the invitation. I look forward to speaking with and fellowship with them, some of you after the event. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Wonderful. Excellent. Wow, that is powerful. So I hope you're picking up all these.